it's gonna be hard, you know, to pick one up. But looking at all of the features, I would say the most exciting one to me is dynamic components in LWC. That's really exciting. The reason is I've been an ISV developer for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I know that this is going to be a real game changer for ISVs out there.
And that is Mohit Srivastava, lead developer advocate here at Salesforce. I'm Julian Duque, your host for the Salesforce Developer Podcast. And here in the podcast, we share stories and insights from developers for developers. Today, we are going to have a special episode where I'll be talking with Mo about the highlights for developers in the Winter 24 release. Mo, thank you very much for joining us on this special edition of the Salesforce Developer Podcast. Today, we are going to be talking about the release readiness live for Winter 24. Mo, how are you doing?
Hey, Julian. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great. Really excited for the Dreamforce season and also for Winter 24 release.
Of course. There are a lot of exciting features. I've been going through the release notes and, oh my God, there is a lot of new things, especially for us developers. So why we don't use this time to go through all of those new things in Apex, LWC, platform, API, so our developer audience can start like improving their applications and building on top of platform.
Absolutely, Julian. Absolutely. Really super excited to be here and talking about all of the innovations that's going on, you know, on Apex, LWC, as you said, you know, a lot of cross-cloud innovations as well, and APIs, of course, and, you know, developer tooling and platform developer tools. I'm so excited to see this release sort of rolling to our customers. And of course, for our developers, I'm too excited because that's going to let them solve some of the problems that, you know, they have not been able to sort of work around.
Okay, let's start on a high note. Which is the most exciting feature for you on this release?
It's going to be hard, you know, to pick one up. But looking at all of the features, I would say the most exciting one to me is dynamic components in LWC. That's really exciting. The reason is I've been an ISV developer for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I know that this is going to be a real game changer for ISVs out there.
Okay, so let's expand a little bit more about dynamic components. Yes. What are those?
Yes, definitely. So dynamic components means, you know, when you actually have a component on a page, you pretty much use today's standard definition, or you pretty much know that this is the component that you have to render. And you probably mm-hmm. indicate that in your HTML markup. What dynamic components allows us to do is like store that component definition on, let's say, backend, like, mm-hmm. you know, in custom metadata. So I can have a custom metadata where I can store that, hey, you know, these are five different components that I want to render based on user behavior. So imagine, Julian, that you have a custom metadata where, you know, you're storing different chart types, like, for example, bar chart or, you know, pie chart or any other, you know, chart types. And mm-hmm. then you have a picker for user on your Lighting Web Components where they can select the type of, you know, chart they want. And based on that, you are dynamically rendering it. So previously, you could do that kind of, but it was hackish. So you could, like, you know, write a lot of if-else templates. But, mm-hmm. you know, like when you have like hundreds of these, how much scalable it can be, right? It's not going to scale. You know, you're going to repeat a lot of code. And, you know, upfront, you're loading all of these components. So there's going to be a lot of like performance impact if you have like too many components, right? Dynamic components allow you to render components at runtime. So also allows our developers to sort of do things like dependency injection, which previously was not possible.
Yeah, I feel the pain. I'm doing exactly that same thing today with a single page application. like, there is a lot of logic in the view that I don't want to manage in the view. I want to have like a different way to manage this logic, especially when there are like components that are very similar to each other, but I need some sort of way to be able to render those depending on logic that comes from the backend and not giving that management to the view. So now I see why this is a great, great feature. So this is coming in winter 24 as a GA?
Yes, exactly. So this is going to be a GA in winter 24 release. And we'll have a lot of content. I know the release notes do not have like code examples, and our community has been asking for some of them. Mm-hmm. Join us at Release Readiness Live, streaming on Salesforce Plus, of course. But also if you're at Dreamforce, join us live, where we'll have product experts walking through these features. And dynamic components is one where we really dig deeper. We show a couple of examples. We show a lot of code examples of how to use dynamic components. So I'm really excited for all of the ISVs and also for all of the customers looking for a dynamic component. And you know what, Julian, I remember like last, 5 years ago when LWC was launched, the first thing that I saw in the community was people requesting for this feature, dynamic components. And mm-hmm. has taken some time, but I think it is here. Probably one of the reasons I think is, you know, obviously our team had to find out optimal solution of how to give this feature and also at the same time manage performance. Because see, one of the things that we do is, you know, we performance optimize all of the components that gets rendered on the page. And with dynamic components, that's a little bit of challenging, but I think it's here. So I'm really excited to see what developers build with this feature.
Beautiful. We need to spend some time to go through this, maybe on a live streaming or blog post, so folks can see the code, how it's done, because definitely this is a game changer.
Yeah.
Continuing on the LWC line, what's any other feature that we are expecting on winter 24?
Yeah, there are a lot of features. Let me break one of the features that, or dive deep into one of the features that I think is going to be definitely useful. So LWC Workspace API. Okay. So I know there are developers who actually build console applications. Console applications in Salesforce is like, it lets you create tabs, sub-tabs, and it gives a complete view. Like, you know, you can have many sub-tabs and tabs all opened on a page, so that it is easier for, let's say, somebody like service agent, who is working with multiple customers at the same time, right? So they can open their different cases, their different customer information, all on a single window. So console apps has been here. But you know what? For developers, it's been challenging to move to LWC because we don't give anything at all. Like, there was no API for that in LWC. They always had to work with Aura components. So either they were working with Visual Force or Aura components. And you know that LWC is always much, much faster and easier to program. And also the syntax feels really native to JavaScript developers, right?
Yep.
So I'm excited about this LWC Workspace API. Again, this is in beta. Hopefully it goes GA next release. But I think this is a great opportunity for developers to look at their application, see what Aura components they have, if there are performance implications on some of these components, try this Workspace API and convert them into LWCs and see if that kind of improves the overall page performance.
Great. This is also another great feature. Currently beta, but soon it will be GA. So for the folks out there, go ahead, try it, and give us feedback. We will like to hear from you. How can we improve this feature?
And the next exciting feature, Julian, and I'm pretty sure you're going to love it as soon as you hear it, is GraphQL Wire Adapter for LWC.
Of course, I love it.
You see, the reason why this is awesome is, you know, we have developers in the community, you know, who came from front-end background, like they've been just using JavaScript to build their applications. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have to, like, you know, fetch data, like, for example, if I have to stream, lists of data. I'm not talking about like single record. You can use Wire Adapter that's there today for streaming a single record based on the record ID. But let's say you need like list of data from an object, you know, or you want to fetch like, you know, data from multiple objects for your LWC component, you no more have to like, you know, sort of write Apex with GraphQL Wire Adapter. So GraphQL Wire Adapter by default gives you features like filtering, sorting, pagination. It handles CRUD FLS for you and sharing rules. And it has all the client-side caching and data management because it is tightly integrated with our Lightning data service, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a new module called Lightning/UI GraphQL API. And you know what? It was in beta last release too. So we took some time to write LWC recipes for them. You can find them in our LWC recipes sample application, where you can see all of these recipes. They start with name GraphQL in them. So you'll have a recipe for pagination, sorting, filtering. So imagine you are building like a table view or a grid view for showing some records, right? You can now use GraphQL Wire Adapter and write your GraphQL all on client side. And let's say you want to add pagination or filtering or sorting. Those kind of capabilities, you don't have to write Apex queries. You know, you can just do it all on front end. Now, I want to recommend that, you know, there's like, it might feel like we are moving away from Apex here, but, you know, I know a lot of you love Apex and Apex is going to be here. You can write Apex for sure. But if somebody is coming from a front end background, they know this industry standard GraphQL, mm-hmm. This is a welcome addition for sure, because they can just program everything, including getting data right within LWC.
Yeah. I had the opportunity to try this in beta, and I was amazed by the performance. And yes. Also, another thing that I like a lot, you were mentioning pagination. And one of the things I like is that the GraphQL API that we support, it uses the relay specification. So we use open source, battle-tested specs. So developers, as you say, that are coming from different backgrounds, don't need to relearn a new technology or a new way to query data because we are already using a defined standard. And with the relay spec, it's very straightforward to perform that pagination, to even do rate limiting of requests, edits performance, the data can be cached. So this is a great feature also for LWC developers.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, talking about these GraphQL Wire Adapter here, right, I want to plug another feature that's coming in API. So GraphQL API. So way this happens, Julian, is first the GraphQL APIs are built, and then on top of it, we have GraphQL Wire Adapter. Mm-hmm. So for GraphQL APIs, now it's going to support mutations. And yes. I know that you have some session for developers at Dreamforce. Are you also talking about mutations there?
I will be covering mutations. Also, by the time this episode is live, there will be a code live where I will be covering also these new GraphQL features. So you will be able to join me and see how this is being done live. Awesome. Of course, this is one of my favorite topics, so I will be covering a lot.
Yeah, so I just want to remind everyone that GraphQL Wire Adapter doesn't support mutation at this point, mm-hmm. but GraphQL API does. And I hope that in future, you know, they port over mutations to this GraphQL Wire Adapter.
Yeah, it will be supported for sure. But let's wait for future release readiness lives or future episodes on this podcast to cover those features.
Yeah, and you know, you asked me about other features. There are a bunch of features actually. And we will list them out in our blog post that will be out on 11th of this month. So go check it out. But one of the features I think it's worth discussing here in this podcast is ability to now create custom elements, like web standards custom elements using mm-hmm. custom elements to define, you know, right within your LWC. So this allows us to, you know, kind of bring third-party components. They might not be built using Lightning Web Component technology, but let's say, you know, something like Lit, I don't know, Julian, I'm a big fan of Lit as well. It's a web component framework that allows you to build applications pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you build something on Lit. You can port over to Lightning Web Components pretty easily, just because now we allow these and there is a new directive called LWC External. So as soon as you indicate that, your Lightning Web Components know that, okay, you know, now you know, I can consume custom elements, you know, defined through web standards. So you will be able to bring your third-party components or your own components built using, you know, any web component technology that uses custom elements. Only thing you need to remember is your org should require Lightning Web Security. And mm-hmm. Lightning Web Security is a setting. It's the upgraded version, more secure version, but same performant as a current locker. We are recommending everyone to move to this Lightning Web Security-based setting rather than using the Lightning Locker. But, you know, of course, you know, this is a transition. You have to analyze, you know, if all of your components are working correctly under this security model. So it's going to take some time for everyone to be there. But if your org is already on Lightning Web Security, this feature is really awesome.
This makes me happy because it is one of the promises around web components in general is reusability. Me being able to use different web components developed by a framework or using the standard web component definition in any other application. So now we will be able to use third-party web components in LWC. This is, in my opinion, also another game changer.
Awesome.
Well, any other like important LWC feature that we need to mention in this episode?
I think worth calling out some of the things, like, for example, you know, if somebody has like event monitoring, which is a security feature which comes with Shield. Now you can enable observability for your LWC. That means you can track all the events that you have in your LWC architecture. So I think this is going to be great for all the customers who have event monitoring enabled. There are some new mobile capabilities, like let's say you're building a mobile application and using LWC. You can use device-specific features like document scanning, NFC, and biometric capabilities. So these are all exciting. Wow. Yeah, this is great. This is exciting. You can find more details about them in the mobile app developer guide with LWC. And we'll post links in the blog post as well.
Well, all of you all LWC developers, be super happy because all of these features are amazing. But you mentioned something that caught my attention that it might seem that we are forgetting about Apex, and that's not true. So what's coming for Apex in this new release?
Yeah, this has been quite a release for Apex, I would say. You know, one of the features that is going GA is Data View in Apex.
Nice.
Data View in Apex is generally available. So for all those of you who don't know what is Data View is MuleSoft, you know, data transformation language. So it pretty much is a functional language like JavaScript. If you know JavaScript, it will not take a lot of effort to actually learn this because everything like syntax and the grammar, everything looks pretty much similar to JavaScript. So, and also this might be a great language to learn, especially if you're looking to learn some functional programming. So once you learn that, you know, of course, you can write these data view scripts in Salesforce, deploy as a metadata, and then reference that data view script in Apex, because in Apex, you can now pretty much do all of the data transformations. For example, let's say somebody has CSV file and they want to convert into XML. That's a lot of Apex code if you try to do it yourself. But with DataView script, right, it's a script that you can add. You can define your transformation rules there. You can map your transformations. And then you just run the script and it does it for you. And one of the things I heard from community, especially on, you know, on LinkedIn, is people are excited to see that it has got some performance boosts compared to beta. So it's been in beta for a couple of releases now. So really excited to see this come through and go GA. And this is going to make data transformations, especially for those developers who are integrating Salesforce with other external systems. Mm-hmm. And they're using Apex to do all those parsing logic. I think this is very scalable and a very neat way to build your transformations.
This is great news for us Salesforce developers and for the folks out there that already have like strong experience with MuleSoft and with Dataweave. Now you can use it in Apex.
Absolutely.
Well, what else? What else do we have in Apex for this release?
Yes. So the other thing that I'm excited to share is a lot of improvements coming to queueable Apex.
Oh, nice.
You know, queueable Apex are one of the best ways to like do your processing of your business logic using asynchronous patterns. So a couple of features that are coming there is setting up maximum depth for your chained queueable Apex jobs. That means, you know, previously there was no maximum depth. And, you know, if developer kind of don't handle it, and if you have like a recursion of something, you know, it used to like fail and it used to go chain itself for let's say n number of times, right? So mm-hmm. I think now you can set that maximum depth available for even developer orgs. So previously for developer orgs, we had a hard limit of like, you can chain things only for 5 times, you know. Of course, our interpretation was not there for other orgs, but developers build in developer orgs, so they might want more depth, right, to experiment. So I like that you can now set maximum depth for chained queueable Apex job. But that's not all. There is one more enhancement that I think is worth calling out is now you can make sure that you are enqueuing only a single instance of your queueable jobs. And the way you do that is by building a signature. So there's a new signature class that allows you to build signatures for your job. So let's say if somebody, for example, wants to make sure that, you know, there's no duplicate jobs that are happening, they can use this signature and build a single instance of async queueable jobs. So the system will make sure that it's not duplicating, right? Also, it reduces row lock and concurrent Apex errors that we've been having.
Nice. All these improvements are great.
Yeah. And then there are developer quality of life, I would say, improvements, right? As a developer, some of the features that our developers have been asking, like, for example, being able to use for loops over an iTrable. So it's interesting. We never had for loop support for an iTrable. You know, iTrable is a type of, mm-hmm. in a variable that you can define. We always had to like write verbose syntax with while loops. And yep. I'm glad that now you have a for loop support. So you can have like an iTrable variable and you can just use for loops, regular for loops. That's a great language improvement, I would say. The other feature that I'm excited is comparator operator. It's called Apex Comparator, Apex Comparator and Collator interface. I think this is a great language improvement because previously, if you had to like do your own comparison or let's say list sorting, you had mm-hmm. to build multiple classes and then build multiple rules. So it was a lot of verbose code. And I think this simplifies it. There's a new interface called Comparator. So you basically, you know, for any class, you can implement that comparator interface. And then when you do the list sorting for that specific class, you can pass in the comparator as a parameter. So that kind of improves the whole sorting experience, I would say. And it's just weird that we never had this.
This is great. Apex is a very mature language, but by seeing these features that I love what you mentioned, these improve the developer quality.
Yeah.
I love it. And I'm pretty sure we will see way more features like this in the future that are being added to Apex.
Awesome.
Well, what else do we have? Is there anything new around development tools?
Yes, platform developer tools is my favorite topic because, you know, all of these features, if we don't have like good developer tooling, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to be hard for developers to like be efficient. So I'm excited that Winter 24 is actually solving a lot of problems in this space. We have made great strides here. One of them is Code Builder. Code Builder will go live in somewhere in mid of October or first week of October. We'll confirm the dates via the blog post. But this is huge. Code Builder is huge because it will let our developers use browser to build Salesforce applications. So today, I know a lot of you are Windows. It takes a lot of time to install the software. Some of you have like, you know, work for organizations where your laptops are like strictly governed by IT. So, you know, you are having challenges installing softwares like, you know, Salesforce CLI, VS Code. But now with Code Builder, you know, everything is on web and we take care of security for you. And we pre-install all the tools that you need to build applications. So all you will need is get access to Code Builder by asking your administrator. And once you have, you create environments. And from there, you can launch Code Builder directly from your Salesforce org and start building your apps. This is exciting, using web to build apps.
Nice. Or if you are traveling and you don't have your computer, you can just use another one, log in, and do your work.
Absolutely, absolutely. Code Builder is really exciting, right? But I like that Code Builder is also getting a new tool which uses generative AI. I know generative AI is hot topic right out there. Everyone is exploring how to create tools and products to make everyone efficient. So I'm excited to share that Einstein for Developers. That's our new generative AI capability. That's our new VS Code extension for Salesforce. And also it's going to be available for Code Builder. So this is moving open beta by October timeframe. So we plan to have an open beta. That means anybody can install the extension, get it enabled for your org, you know, use this tool, Einstein for Developers, to generate Apex classes. So we start with a very basic functionality, right? You can write prompt and generate these Apex classes and then copy paste it to your actual working code. But I'm sure there are a lot of exciting features coming.
Nice. And this is going to be only available for Code Builder?
Yes. So the idea is that extension, Einstein for Developers, is published on open source, right? So on, I think there is a place where you can publish open source VISC. I think it's called Eclipse Open VISC. It's a project where anyone can build an extension. Like, let's say you're building a VS Code extension, you can publish it on Eclipse Open VSX. And then, you know, it's a vendor neutral alternative basically to Visual Studio Code marketplace.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So any extension that is available on this marketplace, Eclipse Open VSX, you can automatically install in Code Builder. So we enabled this functionality in the last release. So let's say you have an extension and you put it on VSX, you Eclipse Open VSX, you can just sort of install it. We have enabled it. So this extension, right, Einstein for Developers, it's going to be available on Eclipse Open VSX and once it's going to be launched. And that will let you sort of really install that on Code Builder and give it a go.
Now, that's a strong reason to use Code Builder.
Yeah, but if you're like, you know, desktop lover, of course, you'll have the VS Code extension too.
Of course. What else do we have for development tools?
Yeah, so one of the things, Julian, you know, generative AI is here, but me as a developer, right, you know, having done software development for like, let's say a decade or so, right, I know a lot of these tools, right, are exciting. They will boost my productivity, definitely, but I trust my skills a lot, you know, just like I'm pretty sure you do yours as well, right?
Of course.
You've mastered it for like 10 years or so or more than that, right? So any code, any machine code that you produce through AI, right, it needs to go through some review process. You have to go through review process. You have to like do peer reviews, etc. So that process is challenging in itself, right? I'm excited to share that Salesforce Code Analyzer, which basically lets you scan your code for security, vulnerability, and performance issue, is now getting a new extension, like new VS Code extension called Salesforce Code Analyzer. So that's going to go live pretty soon, I think this week or next week. I don't know when this podcast will be published, but as of today, it's been scheduled to go live first week of September. So it's going to go live. I think it'll be in beta to begin with. So you can install that on your VS Code or Code Builder. Again, that will also be published to OpenVSX. So you can install that and do static or graph-based analysis. And you can find all the, you know, security vulnerabilities in your code that you write and also the code that Einstein generates for you. So pretty much with that, right, it will make easy to do code reviews or automate some of the code reviews and overall improve the quality of the code here.
Nice. So make sure to check the show notes. Maybe this is already available when this episode goes live.
Yes. And I just want to say that Code Analyzer is already available as a plugin for Salesforce CLI. But we never had a VS Code extension. So that required a lot of command typing. I pretty much like that now you have a graphical user interface with VS Code on top of our command line. So makes it easy to adopt and use.
Improving the quality of life of us developers. This is great.
And there are some more things, Julian. We are not stopping.
More?
Yes, more.
Nice.
So, yes. So one of the things, you know, is getting some attention is Scale Center. So Scale Center is our new product, actually. A new product that lets you analyze performance of your whole org as a whole, right? Like, for example, knowing, what Apex methods are giving you row locks or why you are running into concurrency issues or where there are callout errors. You know, in fact, also analyzing like SOCL that's causing CPU timeouts or in fact, not SOCL, in fact, like Apex process causing CPU timeouts, but SOCL, which is like performing not that great, you know. So all those things like performance issues, they can now be almost in near real time. You can uncover using this product Scale Center. This is available for only unlimited editions. But if somebody is on enterprise editions, they can always talk to their AE and make a case that you have a lot of performance issues that you want to uncover and you can get access to it as well. So Scale Center, again, is available for free for unlimited edition orgs. I think this is going to be great because this will uncover those issues like, you know, row locks and concurrency and, you know, call out failures, these kind of issues pretty easily. We also published a code live session on Scale Center last week. So check it out. It is there. We had product manager sort of discussing what are its feature, how to use it. So I think this is exciting that Scale Center is generally available.
This is powerful. Amazing.
Yes. And then finally, you know, finally, there is one feature that I would love to call out. It went GA right as we are speaking. Beta, right when we are speaking. It's command line commands for DevOps Center actions. So previously,
wow.
Yes. So you had like graphical user interface, right, where you can promote a pipeline or you can create a pipeline, validate your pipeline or resume and pause your pipeline. So you all did through UI. And I know as a developers, a lot of you have been asking me that, hey, can I just use my command line to do all these actions? Because you love command line so much. You know, I love command line a lot. I'm excited that there are commands now to do all of those actions in DevOps Center right from your CLI command line. So go check out the Salesforce CLI release notes. These are not part of the release notes, like the core release notes. They are part of Salesforce CLI release notes. And we'll have links for that in our blog post as well.
That's great. And these new commands, I guess they are available on the version 2 of the Salesforce CLI.
Yes, you are absolutely right. They are available on version 2 of your CLI, and they are bundled as a plugin. So you basically have to install what we call it as Plugin DevOps Center. It's an open source project as well. You can check it on Salesforce CLI GitHub repository. It's called Plugin DevOps Center. So you basically install that plugin for your, you know, SF version 2, and from there you're just executing the commands.
Cool. Well, this is all about platform development tools. What about API and integrations?
Yeah, there has been significant number of changes, for APIs, and I'm excited to talk through some of them. I think one that I already covered is GraphQL now supports mutations. So that means with mutations, you can do insert, update, delete operations on UI API-enabled objects. I think that's great additions for someone working with GraphQL. Bulk API 2, I know Bulk API 2 had some performance issues in the past. So they've improved a lot of things there. Like, for example, query creation has been improved. Efficient processing algorithms using PK chunking. So that makes it more efficient now. And overall, the Bulk API 2.0 gets some more love and it has better performance now. So really excited to have all of you try Bulk API 2 and let us know your feedback. And the other feature that I'm super excited, and I think, Julian, you talked about it actually in one of your blog posts last release, was ability to create name credentials using API and Apex.
Yep.
So this release, they're adding some more methods to it. Like, for example, now you'll be able to update those named credentials, retrieve all of the named credentials that you have in the org, get more details about a specific named credential, and also delete a named credential from Apex. So all of the ISVs out there, I think this is a great feature for you to use this and automate named credentials, which previously used to be like manual work. And those of you who don't know what is named credential, it's a platform feature that allows you to make, you know, authenticated API calls to external system without you yourself having to write a lot of logic for authorizations or authentication. You know, there are specific protocols that name credentials support, and most of your APIs actually fall under that bucket. So you can configure, and then it makes it so easier to write integrations using Apex.
That's fantastic. I will need to review it to see what's new and maybe update what I already published.
Yeah, and then there is, one of the features that I love is connected apps now let you request for JWT tokens. So that's awesome. So JSON web-based tokens. So now you can ask for JSON web tokens, and you can use these web tokens to call your REST APIs.
This is great.
Yes. And event relays, you know, which is basically how you send platform events to Amazon Bridge, mm-hmm. is now also available for Hyperforce org. So we had this event relays for some time, but, you know, those of you in, let's say, Australia or India region, they were not able to use some of these with Amazon Bridge because they were not supported for Hyperforce orgs, but event relays are now GA for Hyperforce. So that's exciting.
Well, that's also another great, great feature for people that is using event relays and Amazon to communicate between the two.
Yeah, and talking about like those communication, there are some more features, like, for example, change data capture. You know, that is how we signal that there is an information change in Salesforce and create an event to an external system. So previously, people who were working with Health Cloud or Field Service Objects, they had certain objects that this did not support, like change data capture was not supported. Now we actually enable change data capture on those objects. So that's exciting for all of you working on Health Cloud and Field Service projects.
Fantastic. Any more updates or changes in API or integrations?
Yeah, one of the features that caught my attention when I was reviewing these release notes. And, you know, our community also talks a lot when release notes happen, and they love the features that we deliver and they talk about it. I didn't see anyone talking about it, but I thought this is really interesting, is OData adapter for Salesforce Connect. So OData adapter is, let's say, you know, you have, you know, an object that is holding, let's say, you know, tons of records, like, for example, you know, in the order of tens of millions, right? But you still want that data to show up in Salesforce. Of course, you cannot put all the data in Salesforce if you don't need to, like, you know, in Salesforce, because that's going to create data skews. But with external adapters like OData, you can put it in, you know, anywhere, like in any other system. And as long as you expose through this OData protocol, you can visualize that as Salesforce objects in Salesforce. These are called external objects. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that got supported is OData 4.01. So with that, now you can actually also capture external change data. So that means, you know, if you have a data outside, sitting outside Salesforce, and you have exposed through OData to Salesforce, and let's say you change data in that external system, you can listen through an external change data capture in Salesforce. So pretty much that lets you write automations like, you know, Apex triggers, you know, on these change data capture. So let's say I have a system which changes the data. I know that the change has happened in Salesforce by just writing or listening for that event capture in Salesforce. Isn't it cool?
It is, definitely.
Yeah, I thought this is great. And I think this is great for all of you who are looking for bringing your external data, but then not storing in Salesforce and still achieving Salesforce automation capabilities or trying to use Salesforce platform capabilities. I think this is great.
This is powerful as well. Well, you mentioned also some other products like CrossCloud or any other products that we have that also got some love for developers in this release. So let's mention those.
Yes, you know what? You know, I've been learning Data Cloud now for, I would say, you know, since TDX, I would say last year TDX, that's where I got serious Data Cloud and started looking into capabilities of that.
We had the opportunity to work together on
Data Cloud. Yes, that was a fun time to produce that customer 360 demo that me and you worked together. So you know what? I explored Data Cloud. I think Data Cloud is it's very, very powerful. And I think it's time for all of our developers to take a look at that. And Winter 24 actually is making it easier to use tools and technology that we are already familiar as Salesforce developers. For example, Julian, check this out. Data Cloud triggered flows. Okay.
So, nice.
So that means Data Cloud, you know, Data Cloud object model, they are really different than the regular model because they allow you to bring billions of data. We're not even talking about millions here, like customer engagement data. Let's say, you know, you are on a website and you want to capture all those clicks and put all the data into Data Cloud so you can drive insights into machine learning and all and activate that data, right? Data Cloud is the product for that. And Data Cloud triggered flows will let you write flows on those data model objects and also on the calculated insights.
That's great. I remember trying to do this, but it was kind of hacky before.
Yes.
I had to write a parser. I had to do like some more work. Yeah. Now I'm seeing this is straightforward.
Yeah. So previously we used to use platform events. So basically you create a data action event and you create a platform event and then you write a flow to listen for that platform event and then parse all the data from that platform event and then use flows to further automate. I think that thing, like using data actions is great. It's still great if you have, you know, let's say another connected org where you want to do the automation. But let's say you are working on an org where you have Data Cloud enabled. For those orgs, just use Data Cloud triggers. They are awesome. You know, they do all these things behind the scenes for you. So, you know, you're just concentrated on building your flows.
Beautiful.
And there are other things there that I would like to call out in the Data Cloud. So one of the things that I'm excited is like sharing data from Data Cloud to Snowflake using zero ETL capability. I know we have a lot of customers who use Snowflake to do, you know, machine learning or other analytics or data warehousing. So I think this is a great feature because you can just, you know, you don't need another ETL, you know, so it's just built into the platform.
This is fantastic, Mo. I will need lot of time to process all of these new features because this release is packed.
It is packed. I mean, I've been watching a couple of releases for now, and I have to say this is a packed release. You can see that, you know, you can see that there are features that are definitely going to make solutioning easier for our architects and also, you know, make it very easier for our developers to just use some of these features and build automations and integrations with Salesforce platform.
And what about CrossCloud? Do we have any worthy mentions from some of the other cloud products?
Yes, a couple of things I would like to call out. CrossCloud, you know, CrossCloud is one of the things that I always have an eye on because I know our customers need multiple clouds because of their business requirements, right? I mean, obviously, if you bring, you know, multiple clouds, you get more efficiency and you can see that, you know, all of these clouds are tailored for specific tasks, right? Like, for example, let's take Tableau, right? That is how you build analytics, engaging dashboards and analytics. So there are a couple of features I want to mention in Tableau. And we're going to show these two features live at Dreamforce, you know, on our show, Release Readiness Live. So another reason to check out Release Readiness Live. One of the features that I'm excited is the native Tableau LWC component. So this is native to platform. That means just like any other standard components that we have, a native Tableau LWC component is there. So you just drag that onto your page and then provide your Tableau server URL and your site ID. And, you know, as long as you have a single sign-on enabled for your Tableau and configured with your Salesforce org, you can turn on a checkbox called token authentication, and it automatically does single sign-on for you and renders that dashboard right within your Salesforce app page. I think this is great. You don't have to like write additional code. You don't have to install a managed package. It's just doing everything for you, and it's native. Also, it can be packaged, you know, and distributed in a managed package if you're an ISV. So I think this is a great feature. You know, it also shows how we are bridging some of these products to core.
Of course. So every release, they are more integrated.
Yes, they are. And, you know, Tableau embedding playgrounds. So this is one thing that I want to call out. And you can actually, so this is also available right now. It went live in this release. Embedding playgrounds, Julian, what it allows you to do is, let's say you have a Tableau dashboard created, right? Mm-hmm. And you want to mash that dashboard within your own web application. Let's say Heroku application you're building, yep, or Experience Cloud, right? We talked about native LWC before. So that's native, right? But let's say you need more interactions. You need more programmatic control. So Tableau embedding playgrounds is where you can put that dashboard, right? And just use drag and drop capabilities to generate a JavaScript and an HTML code that you can just then plug into your application.
Oh, that easy?
Yeah, that easy. And, you know, you can actually, you know, Google Tableau embedding playgrounds, and there is a whole playground that we have created on developer website, you know, thanks to Tableau team, where you can just put your Tableau, you know, dashboard URL from your server and generate JavaScript code.
This is fantastic. I mean, this release is packed with a lot of great features. And I know there are more, but these are the most important features for us Salesforce developers.
Yeah, and don't forget MuleSoft. I want to plug in MuleSoft here. So MuleSoft is one of the powerful tools, I would say, you know, to do both ESB, ETL, and integration, basically automation and integrations, you know. Mm-hmm. It has lots of connectors on any point hub. So you can bring in these connectors, connect any two systems, build your, you know, data transformations using DataVee. So it's powerful technology. But, you know, always I had this, and, you know, me and you actually worked on some MuleSoft, remember?
Yeah.
Last time when we were building the customer 360 demo. So one of the things is like having to install that Anypoint Code Studio felt a little bit backward because, you know, I have used Eclipse like almost 10 years back. I don't know about you. It's an Eclipse-based IDE, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now with this release, actually, there's a new VS Code extension pack for all of the MuleSoft developers out there. So there's a new extension pack. You can install that on your Visual Studio Code. And also, there is a MuleSoft Anypoint Code Builder that is using the same technology like Code Builder, actually. So it's a web IDE where, you know, you can spin your or scaffold your MuleSoft project. And from there, you know, you basically, it makes it very easier because you are already in a friendly territory of like VS Code UI, right? So it lets you easily create your designs. You know, first you can start designing using RAML, mm-hmm, or OS. So you create your integration design, and then you can start implementing those designs right away. You know, by it has a graphical editor, so you can drag and drop, and then it gives a two-sided view with an XML there. We have Akshata, the MuleSoft developer advocate, at Release Readiness Live, you know, going through, walking us through how to use this tool, you know, at Release Readiness Live. So really excited for that.
Yeah, had the opportunity to watch these at a recent AMA that you can also find on our Salesforce Developers YouTube channel.
Awesome.
Cool. So, Mo, I think we have covered pretty much everything. Do you have any last words to our audience?
No, I think this is a lot of information that we have shared. It will take some time to digest them out. Mm-hmm. Pick ones that you think are more relevant to the work that you are doing. Also, be curious to explore the others, you know, which you probably not get it in your day-to-day work. Maybe it's a side project or something that you can use to explore. So we'll have all of the links actually in a blog post that's going to be live. I think it's going to be live before this podcast is going to be live. It's, mm-hmm, scheduled to be on 11th of September. So check that out. It has everything that we discussed in a more easier manner. It also has code examples for some of the LWC features that we talked about. And don't forget to join Release Readiness Live, live from SFO on, you know, scheduled on 14th of September. Again, you can stream it on Salesforce Plus, or if you're at Dreamforce, just catch it up. It's the last day, last show.
Yeah. At the time this episode is going to be live, maybe you will be able to find those recordings on Salesforce Plus. Awesome. Mo, thank you very much for your time and guiding us through this release, Winter 24. And looking forward to have you again on this, the Salesforce Developer Podcast.
Thank you so much for thank you so much, Julian, for having me here. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, bye-bye. If you want to learn more about this show, head on to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, where you can hear all the episodes and read the show notes. Thank you, everybody, and talk to you on the next one.